I'm going to call the Agriculture, Environment, and Natural Resources Finance Committee to order. We welcome everyone back, and members and staff. I have a few introductions I need to make, because we've had some staff changes. I'd like to introduce Ian Marsh. Ian is our new committee LA, and Rebecca Loudon is going to help out in the civil law committee this session. So we welcome Ian to our committee. And we also have Colby Sullivan from Pulse Research. Colby, right over there. Colby is replacing Sam Rankin, and big shoes to fill. And we're very happy to have you here. And Andrew Knudsen is our page. Andrew, right over there. So Andrew will be our page, committee page for this session. And welcome to the committee. The plans...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Did you forget to tell Ian about the rule for bringing coffee for everybody? I noticed he...
Oh, he did. Thank you.
Now all we have to do is get you to pay your fair share and we'll be all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we won't pay
them. The committee will continue to hear bonding proposals today and next Thursday, March 9th. No meeting is going to be held on Tuesday and Wednesday, March 7th and 8th, to accommodate the precinct caucuses and those that have to travel around the state in order to get between their districts and the Capitol. Tentative plans are to recess and meet later in the day on March 9th if we do not complete the morning agenda. So that's going to be March 9th. It'll be a long day. It'll be our catch-up day to try and get everything on the agenda. So we're making every attempt to hear all the bills that have been presented to the committee and have received a hearing request. So it may take us a little while. The recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee from this committee must be completed by the week of March 13. And so the schedule is pretty tight. And of course, as always, if you have any questions or any concerns or anything you'd like to talk to me about, members, please just stop by my office. Let staff know that you'd like to get some time. We'll make certain that that's arranged. Time crunch here, but your concerns or issues are top priority, so just let me know. We will first start off with approval of minutes. If you go in your packets, we have a series of minutes, and we're going to handle most of those in just one motion. The minutes are for May 10th. For the committee, I guess that was one of the last committee hearings we had last session. During the interim, on November 28th, we had a hearing in Le Sueur. Also on November 28th, 2005, we had a hearing in Annandale. And on January 23rd, we had a hearing in Mountain Iron Community Center. And January 24th at the Lakeview Castle in Duluth, actually Duluth Township. And so would members take a look at those? Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing no additions and corrections, all in favor of approving those minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. We also have a minutes from February 2nd. It was the Joint Agriculture, Environment, Natural Resources Finance Committee with the Senate Environment, Agriculture, and Economic Development Budget Division. And those minutes are before us. Now, we're working these minutes to be approved by both committees, and so there's actually two hearings that we held, two separate days, but there were some corrections or changes that need to be made in the other day, so that we'll deal with that set of minutes next week. But we believe the minutes of February 2nd before you are accurate, and if there's any, are there any additions or corrections? Okay, the February 2nd minutes, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Vote prevails, those minutes are approved. And the first bill before us today will be House File 2686, Representative Westrum, and this particular bill is to be, we're having a hearing here so we get familiar with this issue, and then we will vote on this to pass this committee, or this bill on to higher education. I believe that they will actually be dealing with it from a bonding standpoint, but we wanted to be get members fully acquainted with this issue and answer any questions that you may have on it. Representative Westrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. With me today is Greg Cuomo, the director at the West Central Research and Outreach Station, Mike Reese, and a gentleman from Norway, a dog, and I'm going to butcher his last name, Ordebo, and I'll let him do a better job next when he introduces himself. But we're excited to have him here, and the reason he is here is because Norsk Hydro is a large company in Norway that has energy and other components of their business, but they have worked with making anhydrous ammonia from electricity and for several years, decades, in fact, and I'll let them talk about it. But that's what this project is about, is bonding requests to take a renewable energy in Minnesota, wind turbine, wind energy, making hydrogen out of that, and that hydrogen then being a source to make anhydrous ammonia by taking nitrogen out of the air, and the similar process that is done by natural gas. It's just wind energy can be a source of making that right here in Minnesota instead of having to ship in the fertilizers we do from Canada and the southern states and from other countries. And so with the cost of fertilizer that has doubled and tripled in the last few years for farmers, this is a model we would like to get started and developed at the West Central Research and Outreach Station, the renewable energy division that they have started out there to do more research and test different models and deploy commercial development of successful ways to use renewable energy to replace energy needs in our lives. And this is one way that we can take wind turbines, wind power, and make anhydrous ammonia and nitrogen fertilizer for farmers, which is a huge demand in our state. And so with that, I won't talk any longer. I know that each of these gentlemen have a few things to say, and we'll try to leave a few minutes for questions at the end. So thank you for your consideration, and I urge we pass this to higher ed, and hopefully we can be successful in bonding for this project this year.
Welcome to our committee, and please introduce yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. Committee Chair. My name is Greg Cuomo, and I'm the director at the West Central Research and Outreach Center in Morris, Minnesota, part of the University of Minnesota. I'd like to introduce two additional members of our team if there's questions. And sitting behind us is Cecil Massey from Sylvester Bloomberg. He's doing a lot of the design work on out of Roseville, doing the design work on the wind to hydrogen and anhydrous ammonia project. And Rolf Nordstrom, who heads up the Upper Midwest Hydrogen Initiative, working on getting some of the working with the business and industry to get these technologies forward. What I'd like to do is just spend a very few minutes giving a little context and background to where we are in this project. Turn it over to Mike to give you some details and a little bit to Doug to talk a little bit about the experiences in Norway and how they fit with what we're doing here. At the Research and Outreach Center, we're part of what is currently the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences. We're in a rural part of the state, and we have a very strong desire to have a positive and substantial impact on the citizens of the state. And renewable energy, this project really came about as a way of really trying to turn the resources that we have available in western Minnesota, the wind and our ability to grow biomass crops, into an advantage. Our goal was to develop a community-scale, integrated research and demonstration renewable energy center. We really have a two-part vision. One is we want to provide a model for rural communities and producers to integrate renewable energy into their economies. And the second, as part of the university, we want to conduct and facilitate research and development of the knowledge that, and to move this technology forward and bring it into use. We're really working on four core systems. The one we're going to talk about today is what we call a hybrid wind system, where we take wind from a wind turbine, turn it to hydrogen, and then make anhydrous ammonia, which is nitrogen fertilizer. These projects, the phase one of that is funded through the LCMR. The project as a whole, the wind turbine, some of those things, funded by the Initiative for Renewable Energy and the Environment collaboration with us. Some of the other projects are the University of Minnesota Morris Biomass District Heating and Cooling Facility, which we funded in the last session. We're working with the community of Morris and other areas and local farmers in a community anaerobic digester. And the fourth part of this project is what we call a solar smart building addition. And I'd just like to take a moment to differentiate. There is a request in the university's package for $2.5 million to do a renewable energy addition at West Central Research and Outreach Center. This has been in the planning stage actually for 9 years. We've been doing assessments and looking at space and education needs and really trying to tie this in an effective way for being an education and outreach center arm of the university focusing on renewable energy. And that is in the university's bonding request. What we're talking about today, this Bill 2686, is really this part about making anhydrous ammonia and the excitement that it could bring and the development that it could bring in Minnesota. It's a bit of a difference. It's an opportunity that presented itself to help establish this exciting new technology in Minnesota. And what happens is when you have these opportunities at the university, we need to be able to act and act quickly. So although it's not in the six-year plan, it's something that I think has a lot of potential and can bring a lot of value to the state. I think with that, as you're well aware, there's a wind turbine. We produce about the concept is we produce about 60% of the electrical needs of the University of Minnesota Morris. What we don't use goes out into the grid. And what we're really proposing is taking that energy that now has a very low value going out in the grid and storing it as hydrogen. The wind to hydrogen project is actually a three-phase project. Phase one, as I said, is funded primarily with LCMR, some cooperation with Xcel Energy, the Initiative for Renewable Energy in the Environment. That's really to produce hydrogen and be able to burn it in a reciprocating engine. The second phase of that, and what we're talking about today, is to be able to take that and make it into nitrogen fertilizer, make it anhydrous ammonia, and really be able to impact things going on in the state today. And I don't want to take too much time, so I'm going to let Mike go into some of the details and talk about the project itself.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. I'm Mike Reese, Renewable Energy Coordinator at the University of Minnesota, West Central Research and Outreach Center. And I'm going to take a little time to talk about, first of all, the process, then I'll talk about the drivers and the scenario that we are putting forward. The process is you take wind energy, you send that to what's called an electrolyzer, and Norsk Hydro produces electrolyzers. They're one of one company that produces them. At the electrolyzer, you bring water to it, and you separate hydrogen from water. The wind to hydrogen to ammonia project would be to take that hydrogen, take nitrogen from the air, and combine it in a process that's called a Haber process. Haber process has been around since the 1930s, so it's a well-known process. The drivers for this project are we have a high wind resource in Minnesota, and coupled with the low capacity of the transmission grid, have a high local demand for ammonia and nitrogen fertilizer with all the accompanying storage, capacity, and handling infrastructure. If it's high cost of ammonia due to rising natural gas prices, it's really crippling to farmers and their ability to make a profit on their crops. And then we have the success of farmer-owned ethanol plants. It's really a unique model for the nation and the world. And it has stimulated, as you know, economic development experience, and it's a proven model. We have this increasing public will to move towards energy independence, clean energy, and hydrogen economy. We have a strong hydrogen industry within the state with companies such as 3M, Donaldson's, and Integrus, and an organization such as the Upper Midwest Hydrogen Initiative that represents those companies. This would be a unique project in that if you were to develop a wind farm, you would no longer be required to do an interconnection study, which is one of the bottlenecks for wind developments. You would also have no requirements to have a power purchase agreement since you would be producing the energy and using it in rural Minnesota. And then a unique benefit to this is that Minnesota could become the national leader in renewable energy or renewable hydrogen production. And with that, the manufacturing, the technology, industry, and so on. So we have this large wind resource. We have this huge demand for anhydrous ammonia, largest volume of corn production in the world in the Midwest. And it just fits well that we take our wind energy and produce anhydrous ammonia. Natural gas is what is used to produce anhydrous ammonia right now, and all the trends from the Department of Energy indicate that the prices will be continue to increase, the demand will continue to increase, and also imports will be the main source of liquid natural gas, liquefied natural gas. One important component of this is that as we move towards liquid natural gas, it's becoming more of an oil industry, similar to the oil industry, where we're importing it, and that makes liquid natural gas a commodity and also drives the price up. And we really see a scenario in which the wind enterprise sells electricity to the hydrogen and ammonia enterprise. Therefore, you'd be able to take advantage of the federal wind production tax credits. Farmers would invest in the system and then would be required to purchase a portion of the ammonia production. And we see these similar types of systems with the ethanol plants and their demand or their delivery requirement for corn. We see them in the hog industry and farrowing systems where farmers invest in the hog farrowing systems and then are required to take groups of hogs in return. So the model is well accepted in rural Minnesota. And also it provides an opportunity to level out costs over the long term, along with being able to receive financial benefits from increased wind production. And again, we've seen this in the ethanol industry, and we've seen that exponential growth and success. And with that, I'd like to talk a little bit about the history of anhydrous electricity to anhydrous. Dog Overbull represents Norsk Hydro. Norsk Hydro is an energy and aluminum company with $26 billion in sales, 36,000 employees. But they started relatively in a parallel track with what we're proposing now. They had a large amount of hydroelectric power, and it was really a stranded resource in the early 1920s. So they took that hydroelectric power and they designed the technology to produce nitrogen fertilizer and to meet a need of their country and of the world. And as a result, they became the largest nitrogen fertilizer company in the world. Since that time, they have switched to traditional technologies. And I'd like to introduce Doug and let him give a little bit more of the history and the details and what their interests might be.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Dag Øvrebø. I work for Norsk Hydro in the New Energy Department. As Mike said, we have a history here which might be relevant to your project. And when I came over for the first time a year ago to Minnesota, I had the pleasure to discuss these things with Mike Reese, Greg Kumo, and Dick Hemmingson, Guy Riri. And I thought this sounds like a good project. It made me think back to how the company, Norsk Hydro, started off 100 years ago as the sort of first company in the world to produce synthetic fertilizers. And as Mike said, it was set off making ammonia from renewable electricity, and it was done that way until the late 60s when natural gas became available at very low cost, and we switched over to natural gas-based fertilizer production. But as the natural gas prices have been going up and the renewable energy prices from wind, for example, has been steadily falling, you may see a situation when it might be beneficial to look back at the old technologies. And it's a pleasure to be over here. I've been over here this week to see if there's any way we can participate and help with the competence and the background we have got, and also to better understand the project and the basis for what you want to do. Thank you.
Go ahead. I think this is, we are coming back to a technology that we think could have great economic and rural development impact in Minnesota. we're getting to a part where we think it is the natural gas prices the way are becoming economical again, and we're very close to making this a reality. So that's, you know, the way I think of it, that's what universities do. You know, we take technologies, we take things that are close that maybe aren't applicable and aren't ready for commercial use at this time, start to try to work out the systems and technological needs to make it a reality and make it become something that can really impact the state. And so that's what we're proposing to do with this bill.
The ammonia industry in the state of Minnesota is a $300 million industry. It's a ready-made industry for us to utilize that wind resource. And I would like to let you know that we have Cecil Matthew back here with us, the engineer with Sebastian Blomberg, currently working on the design of our Phase 1 wind hydrogen projects, and also Rolf Nordstrom representing the Upper Midwest Hydrogen Initiative. And if you have questions for any of us or them, feel free to let us know what those could be. Thank you.
With that, Mr. Chair, if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Hey, thank you very much. Very interesting presentation. Are there questions? As Representative Junkie.
Thank you. Just a comment and then a short question. I just want to point out to members, and Representative Westrom and I are authors of this bill, but this is exciting stuff. I mean, right now we're arguing about putting up windmills, and then we really argue about how we're going to transmit that wind power into Minneapolis and Chicago and beyond to where we need it from Western Minnesota. And frankly, I don't know if we're ever going to satisfy that transmission need. I think that's going to be an ongoing bottleneck in the whole wind system in Western Minnesota, the way I read through it at this point in time. So I think this is our future, not only the community wind where we're producing power for our own communities out there, but then also production wind like this is what I call it, production wind, where we're producing a product, whether it's hydrogen or anhydrous ammonia. That is the future, and that's the way that I think the wind industry in Minnesota will grow and prosper and lead, frankly, hopefully across the nation. So I think we need to pay real close attention to this and really move forward on it, Mr. Chair and committee members, as it goes through the process. I know it's going over to higher ed, but I think we need to advocate as it moves through there and hopefully out onto the House floor, Representative Westrom, to keep that marker in there. Just a question, you know, this is all, you know, cutting edge kind of stuff. What is your time frame? I mean, what do you think realistically? 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? I know it's always hard to predict, but as research progresses and as you look at the, 20 years ago, wind power was 25 years ago, 40 cents to produce. Now it's under 3 cents. I mean, using those kind of models, are you able to predict when will we be producing anhydrous that our farmers can be putting on the fields in Western Minnesota?
I believe it is a 5-year process. Time frame for commercialization, and that's we need to validate this project, and that's what we do as a university, is just work through the issues, and we feel that this is to a point where I believe that it's a 5-year time frame.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's incredible. I think when you look at how long it takes some of these other technologies, we're at that point now. I think that we really need to give some impetus here and move ahead with this.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, part of the reason Norsk Hydro is a good resource and that the research station has connected up with is they have done this and know some of the do's and don'ts, and their hydropower is a similar type of resource as we've got in wind, so that's why they're a key ally.
Any other questions, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Westrom and the people from Morris. I hope you get your money and that you make it through, similar to what Representative Junkie said. I'm just wondering as to how far the rollout might eventually go when you mention no interconnection study or payment and no power purchase agreement. In areas of Minnesota that are covered by the rural electric co-ops, who, in my experience, they come and tell you that we experience line loss and our customers are, we have to keep our customers and to keep people in buying power from us, and you're describing an ethanol ownership model with the ammonia component purchase requirement similar to the farmer-owned co-ops, ethanol plants. Do you know where the support maybe is going to be in 5 years for generating power without a power purchase agreement, and the appetite for that in the service territory that is covered by the rural electric co-ops? I think they'd be a natural partner, and I think they're going to need to be a natural partner, but they seem to be hesitant about the actual investment in renewable energy.
I believe, as we mentioned, interconnection study is not a requirement. A power purchase agreement is not a requirement. And requirement is the key. I think it would be a better model to be able to interconnect to the transmission grid and sell power to the utilities when they actually want it.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, there will not be, should not be an adversarial relationship with the rural electric associations. If we provide, the farmer groups provide electricity when they want it at a price that is agreeable to both. So I believe we need, part of the university's role is to develop those dynamic models and work through those issues. And I believe that they would see this as a viable project and really help their operating system.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get that on the record 5 years prior to it coming on.
Well, a point of clarification. This model, I think, actually, Mr. Chairman and Committee, is actually very synergistic because it's not proposing competing power, so we would not be competing for customers. This is an additional value, and in fact, if we couldn't get the transmission things Mike was talking about, it not only would be a complementary program, it would actually be very advantageous, but the thing we could do then is supply, help in peak power demand times, and when they needed energy, we could convert that to electricity. Otherwise, if we made the anhydrous ammonia, it would be in a non-competitive environment. We would be doing something different than making energy, we would be making fertilizer.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Junkie,
thank you.
You might like to make a motion that we recommend this bill and that it be re-referred to education.
That would be my motion, Mr. Chair.
And the I think along with that, members, you might want to try and include some language in our overall recommendation, even though it's not part of our budget considerations, but it's advice to capital investment. We are the Agriculture and Environment Finance Committee, and I think it would be appropriate for us to weigh in on this one as much as possible.
Mr. Chair, that would be very helpful in direction to the capital investments, if you'd be willing to do that as a committee. And Chris Raddatz from the Farm Bureau is here and there intently looking at this proposal. I'll let him convey that to you at a future time, but there is a lot of interest from the ag community and the environmental side, so thanks.
Okay. We have Representative Junkie's motion before us. Any questions? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're now going to have House File 2589. Representative Simpson. Committee.
Thank you, Representative Osman, Chair Osman, and members for giving us time to be here this morning. I'm going to start out and say that the project I'm working on is the Otter Tail River Restoration Project, and this is something I've been looking at and working with the local community for quite a while. And last night I had the opportunity to go to the MEP Legislative Forum. And I found that their goal is working together to protect and restore Minnesota's environment. I have with me this morning Mr. Ken Nelson of Otter Tail, representing the city and residents of the surrounding area. Ken is known to everyone in the Perham area as the CEO of Kenny's Candy, Tuffy's Pet Foods, and Barrel of Fun Chips. I can't begin to tell you how many hours of time and dollars of his own personal money he's put towards this river cleanup. I feel this river cleanup project really fits the criteria of what MEP was talking about last night at their meeting, and at this time I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Nelson and let him explain the project and take you through it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. Just a kind of a tag along on the presentation.
If I could get you to identify yourself for the record.
Kenny Nelson.
Thank you.
Just to tag along with the folks that just made a presentation on a very exciting project, I think. I have three businesses in Perham. The first one is a company called Barrel of Fun. We use about 15 million pounds of sunflower oil a year, which we get right across the border in Mandolin, North Dakota. We, at the end of, when our oil is no longer usable to make snacks and chips, we take that oil and actually put it into our trucks and use it as biodiesel fuel. So this, and another thing that we do at our pet food company, we buy steam from a local incinerator and use the steam to produce our pet foods. We are in the process, the next presenter will be a gentleman that's the city manager at Perham, looking to expand the incinerator. And one of the things that they plan to do is to bring steam down to our snack food plant to be able to use that steam to produce some of the products that were produced there as well. Now, I'd like to just talk about our project, which is the restoration for the tail of the otter. I happen to be on the board of directors of Otter Tail Power, and we're involved in renewable energy with wind energy construction and things of that sort. I've got a good friend who's also working on an ethanol plant in Fergus Falls. But anyway, I live in a little town called Otter Tail, and Otter Tail, the name comes from a long time ago, apparently some Indians or some American natives called this little stretch of river, or a little stretch, a little peninsula, the tail of the otter. And what's happened, ladies and gentlemen, over a period of about 50 years, a guy decided that they'd like to take that little peninsula, and that's on the third page, there's a little strip of land there, and he decided to dynamite an opening about halfway down the peninsula. And that little opening has grown from about 16 feet to about 36 feet now. And as a result, the flow of the river basically goes out that opening instead of the natural opening, which is at the obviously at the end of the river, which feeds into the lake. So what's happened is the river, which at one time and up to about 20 years ago was very pristine, it was just very, it was very clean water, sandy river, it was just awesome. And the last page of our little brochure shows what the river looked like 20 years ago. The little girl that's on that picture is now 23 years old. She was about 3 years old then. And it shows what the river looked like 20 years ago, and then it's what it looks like today. It's become a virtual swamp. And there's a number of land or owners that have property right on the river, and it's just become almost unnavigable. In fact, it has become unnavigable. You cannot enter into the lake from the original man-made, or the original opening, which is you'll see on that little map there. So I'm here at the request of a bunch of us who have at this point put about $70,000 into some engineering studies, as well as we've had to do some riprapping and a bunch of things to try to keep this river looking as good as we could. So as a member of the group, I appreciate the opportunity to be in front of you people. This is an important project for us. We ask that you look at it pretty seriously, obviously. And I'm kind of glad I'm here today. I'm glad to hear a presentation like the folks put on before me, because this is a time of interesting time for the development of renewable energies, especially with the cost of natural gas, which we use a lot of. It's gotten terribly expensive, as all of us probably know, a lot of people know. So this is kind of a fun time, interesting time to be involved in the process. And my good friend here will make a presentation next about how he intends, or how they would like to receive some funding to, as I understand it, double the capacity or increase the capacity of our present incinerator in Perm, which, as I say, there's a big creamery in town, a big milk plant, cheese factory that uses, at this point, about half the steam, and then our pet food company uses the other half of the steam that's produced from that refuge plant. So, I guess if there's any questions, be happy to try to answer them regarding our little project.
Representative Simpson, I've got a pretty good understanding of the problem. What I'm still missing are how you're going to actually try to remedy the situation, or what would the money be used for?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, what the engineering firm has done is, in working with the local DNR, they have found that the best way to try to remedy this is to try... The first thing, the best thing you could do is to fill this original... fill this hole back in and take the river back to its original state. Due to the fact that there are so many people that live upstream from it, and the chaos that would be caused by doing it, the group of people that live downstream feel that it's just not the thing to do. It's not the correct thing to do. People have bought property and with the ability to use that unnatural gas. So what the engineers have done, with the help of the DNR out of Fergus Falls, is they've come up with a plan to put in steel plates and narrow the width of this opening, this unnatural opening, back down to like 16 feet wide, so boats can still navigate through it, but it'll be a controlled atmosphere. It will not be able to be washed out to the width it is, which therefore will bring water back down the river. Also, the thing that they're going to do right now, because the water turns and comes through here so fast, it's taken the water and it's taken the sand and it's taken it, washed it out to the point where it's 12 to 15 feet deep, where it makes a turn in the river, takes it out, and then it drops the sand out about 100 feet out, 150 feet out. So with this also, this project will do is they're going to go in and they're going to put rocks back at the bottom of the river and bring that water back up to probably 3 feet deep. So what their intent is to try to control the water so it's not all escaping through this unnatural area and taking it back down the river where it belongs, a large majority of it. And that's the justification of what they're trying to do. Trying to, again, clean up the river, get the water flowing the way it's meant to flow, and bring it back to more of its natural state.
Okay. And with regard to the pictures, the photos showing what the past situation versus what it is today, is the condition that we're looking at in the current photo because the water level has gone down, or because sediment has come in, or is it a combination?
Well, what's happened is basically the man-made opening has eroded to the point that it's actually about 36 feet wide now, and the flow of the river is going so heavily out that opening that there's no flow going down the river, which is causing all the foliage to grow and everything, and it's actually closed the other opening. So we need to dredge out the original opening as well in this whole project.
Representative Heckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was out and I looked at this situation, and the pictures pretty well depict exactly what's going on there. If you look at where this unnatural man-made opening is, you can actually see the water just flowing through there, and it's just rapidly going through that man-made opening, and it's just a disaster what's taking place there. I think the local people have put a lot of money and effort into getting this resolution, and this is something that we've got to take care of. This is just a disaster. I've walked along the tail of the otter there, and when you get down to the end, there's no flow of water whatsoever. This has occurred because there is no flow there anymore. The water level is lower, and the water is not flowing. And when you get to the end, it's just kind of plugged up there now. That, like the gentleman said, it's got to be dredged out there at the end now. So this is really a shame. If the committee members could go out there and take a look at this, this is a huge disaster that occurred here. We've got to fix this problem.
The bill is calling for $80,000 of non-state money. What's the source of that? Or
at this time, Mr. Nelson and people that are associated with that project there and the Lake Association will be raising those funds locally and putting their own contributions towards that.
Okay. So the $80,000 is actually additional money that you're going to put into it, or is it counting, trying to count some of the money that you've already put into it with regard to engineering?
We're probably counting some of the money we put into it already as part of it.
Okay. We probably need to know that in order to be able to make sure the language is appropriate, because sometimes past spending may or may not be called matching funds, so or non-state sources.
I'll get that clarified, Mr. Chair.
So we need that clarified, I think. Okay. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I totally appreciate what you're trying to do in terms of getting the flow back into the river, and I totally support that. My concern is that if you are going to continue to allow this unnatural piece of the river or an unnatural opening to be open, you will be constantly battling a force of nature at a fairly tough expense, I would think. The river isn't going to stop wanting to go through this narrow opening. And what are you, since you seem to be leaning toward keeping that opening open, what do you anticipate as the ongoing expense of keeping that piece open and trying to fight the river constantly?
Well, with the engineering firm that we've hired out of Detroit Lakes and some hydrologists as well have determined that if we can get this opening down to 16 to 18 feet, that the flow going out the unnatural opening and the flow going down the river will create enough current to keep the river clean. We're going to have to dredge out the original opening, and we're going to have to do some harvesting of the wild rice and stuff in the river. So we're pretty certain that we've done enough studying, and the engineers have done enough to convince us that there'll be some flow going out the unnatural opening, but there'll be a lot more flow coming down our opening, and this opening won't erode anymore with the steel structures that we'll be putting in there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you look at the alternative of making this unnatural opening essentially into a lake and not letting the river flow in and out of it, except at maybe a very small culvert type situation instead of this very large situation? It just defies common sense for me to have the river being able to flow through this. It's going to be high water, low water. You're going to have, it just feels like a long-term maintenance issue. And if it were made into a lake, it is an unnatural opening. We're closed at both ends, essentially, except to have a little bit of water coming in and out. You wouldn't be fighting the river forever. And that's my concern about spending the money and not actually solving the problem, but trying to fight the river all the time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenia, thank you. I think the one thing that has to be looked at is that this unnatural opening was put in approximately 50 years ago when people weren't well aware of what they were doing and the results of what they were doing. Over the time frame, as that unnatural opening became larger and larger and larger, as it has in the last number of years, that's when the problem really became a problem. As this thing is brought back to a narrow width, due to the engineering studies and amount of input that's been put into it, they feel that the amount of water that will be forced to go down the natural course and back into the lake naturally will alleviate that problem. And I think that by putting the steel plates in, they're going to riprap it and really control that so that it doesn't break open again. I'm hoping that there will not be long-term continuity expenses. It should be a one-shot deal, and that's kind of where we're at.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you give me an idea how many property owners are affected?
There's about 30 homes on the river, roughly.
30?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a couple of questions come to mind. Have you been working with Bowser too on this? This seems like a Bowser project in my area, where they're doing dams and riprap and stream bank. I'm trying to understand why Bowser isn't involved with this and their monies and their funding, and where have they been in all this process up in your area?
Well, we've thank you, Mr. Junkie. We've looked at just about every aspect, and we've talked to a lot of people and the DNR, especially and the local soil and water boards and stuff. They think it's a great project. They'd like to see it done, but they just tell us they don't have the revenue to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's what brings us here today.
And Mr. Chair, I guess when 30 and if there's more upstream that benefit, I'm just wondering, you know, for $385,000, why it wouldn't be like an assessment process for a road? Why you wouldn't just, I mean, if I was a property owner looking at this before and after picture, I sure would get a lot of property value from the navigable waters that would come back to me, and the county would receive more taxes. I mean, wouldn't there be a will just to do it? I mean, if I own this property, I sure would say, well, let's divvy her up and let's get her done. You know, I'm not understanding why folks would want to leave it at this, or have you talked about that type of scenario?
Well, we've talked about it. That may be the only alternative if we can't get some help. All the people that live on this river are, there's a lot of modest homes, and they're not all in a position to contribute or want to contribute a lot of money to fix this up.
Right. And Mr. Chair, I guess so. I'm just thinking out loud on possible, you know, whether it's Bowser funding or whether we do some more matching with a little more participation from homeowners. And then my last comment would be just to our staff. I see part of the breakdown here is three years of aquatic vegetation harvesting. I would guess you'd want to, in your accounting, make sure that that isn't, I don't know if that's bondable or not. Again, one of those questions, but you're talking about $80,000 coming in from your end, that would probably cover that, but we have to be careful, Representative Simpson, writing up the bill and whatnot, that at the last hour in the governor's office, someone says, well, that's not bondable, and it's gone if it ever gets to that point. So your language will have to be very specific, I think, on what it's used for.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll,
thank you.
Well, 25A9 will be laid over for consideration for committee recommendation.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Mr. Simpson, you have the next one, 2590.
Well, thank you again, members. It's interesting. I'm here back to back. I hope that's okay. You can put up with me for a few minutes, and then I will go away. But I have with me today City Manager Bob Luisa from the City of Perham, and we have a handout here that we'd like to hand out. And what we're looking at here is for funds to expand the county, the five county resource refuse burner that's located in Perham, Minnesota. And we have a history of doing a good job with it in Perham, and have our representative here to talk about it a little bit and give you the history of where it's at and where we'd like to go with it. So,
welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Luizzo. I'm the city manager in Pahrump, Minnesota. And if I might just start out, the previous proposal that you listened to, I would point out that the Otter Tail River is a major resource in the entire area, and improvements to that river not only benefit those immediate residents, but they would also benefit the entire area by improving the entire system. So, the proposal that we are working on right now, we have been working with the folks that were formerly the Office of Environmental Assistance. They're now part of the MPCA. Looking at the feasibility of expanding the Pahrump Resource Recovery Facility to be able to process additional waste that is being generated in the four county area, and also from two additional counties that potentially would be delivering waste to our facility. As the handout notes, there are currently, or there were formerly, as of yesterday, they closed the incinerator at Fergus Falls, Minnesota, and the waste from that formerly went into that incinerator will now be heading to a landfill. And our proposal is to expand the firm incinerator to be able to process that waste and to utilize the steam generated for that. We have an existing customer, Bongard's Creamery, which would be able to use additional steam. And we currently operate a gas-fired auxiliary boiler, as we call it, to supplement the steam demands for Tuffy's Pet Foods and Bongard's Creamery. And so our first use of the steam generated from the expanded facility would go to reduce the reliance on the gas boiler. Any additional steam that we have would be, there are several potential customers, the primary one being Barrel of Fun Snack Foods. We have done some preliminary evaluation of the feasibility of extending steam lines and being able to supply that facility, and that would appear to be financially feasible. So I believe that we have a market for the steam. Our current facility has been operating since about 2002. We would be proposing to add to that. We have two combustion units in the current facility. They feed into one boiler system and one air pollution control unit. And what we would be proposing to do would be to add one new boiler, separate the two combustion units, and also to relocate the air pollution control equipment that's currently at the Fergus Falls incinerator over to Pahrump. The air pollution control equipment at Fergus Falls is approximately 3 years old. It is state-of-the-art equipment, and it is compatible with the system that we have at Pahrump. And in fact, the facility manager that we have is familiar with operating that type of equipment and has operated that in the past. So the project makes good sense in terms of being able to continue to process waste that had been processed and not divert that to a landfill. And it also will provide a ongoing source of steam to existing customers, and there are other customer bases that we would be able to serve if we could successfully complete this project. The total estimated cost for the expansion project is $8 million. We have submitted a preliminary application to MPCA through the Capital Assistance Grant Program requesting $3 million for this project.
Question for some past?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the Fergus Falls air pollution equipment would fit your needs, and I'm just wondering what's Fergus Falls doing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's a good question. The Fergus Falls incinerator provided steam to the State Hospital Regional Treatment Center that was located in the community, and and you may be aware that that facility has closed. They did study alternatives to try and look at if they could sell steam to other facilities in the area, and they don't have a viable steam customer. And in order to continue operating, they would have had to make a significant investment into their plant. Yeah, and so it just didn't seem feasible for them to continue to operate that plant. So.
Thank you. Representative Guineas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two questions, and actually one of them perhaps is for staff to help me out here. Historically, I thought that we would grant money to the Office of Environmental Assistance, and then they would choose which projects kind of in a ranking system. Is that now that the Office of Environmental Assistance has been merged with PCA, is that process now gone, or are we keeping to that process where we actually grant money to OEA and let them choose the projects? And I don't know the answer to that, and perhaps fiscal staff can help us with that.
Mr. Reynolds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McGinnis, you're right. There still is a CAP program in statute. It's called the Capital Assistance Program. It is now, would be at PCA since OEA has moved to there. They do have a process within the agency to rank the applications. Just additional information. The governor has requested some money for that program. I believe, looking up, it's in the $4 million range in the governor's recommendation. The agency, I believe, has indicated they have 23-some million dollars worth of applications on hand. I don't know the answer to the question on has the legislature ever designated which projects would be done. You know, it's not on... I wouldn't be surprised if it had at some point, but I also know that at many years it's just passed, leaving it to the agency to pick the programs. But I will look back at some of the recent bond bills and see if it was ever designated.
If I could, my second.
Representative Guineas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Reinhold. My second question is and you can help me out with this. Our priorities in waste management are always to recycle before you burn and burn before you landfill. And you talked about the before you landfill, but not the recycling before you burn. Help me out. What is your recycling rate now? And with this in place, what would your recycling rate be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I can't tell you the exact recycling rate for all of the counties that our facility serves at this point. I know that in discussions with representatives from MPCA and previously with OEA, the four counties are Otter Tail, Wadena, Todd, and Stearns County, and they have some of the highest recycling rates in the state of Minnesota, is my understanding. We have, within the city of Perham, where we have direct jurisdiction, the city of Perham has a curbside recycling program that's been used very effectively. Internally, I think we also have a program through the county where all of our major industries recycle cardboard and other products that can be selected out of the waste stream. So at the present time, the recycling programs in the counties that we serve are focused on the ability to recycle from the home or from the business rather than having a separate recycling program at our center.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, follow up. Okay. I think it would be helpful, in fact, we should know what your recycling rates are. Minnesota historically has been a high recycling state. But we have lost we used to be number one or two, but we are dropping, and I don't think that's where Minnesota, going backwards, is a Minnesota value. It would be important to know, as part of your submission of this, what your recycling rates are, and if this is put into place, what your recycling rates would be.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Well, I do have one other question. The urgency for this improvement, is it something that needs to happen in the very near future because of some volume problems, or do we have some time to work on this?
Well, I think that the project takes approximately 2 years to implement, so if we're going to try and reduce the amount going to landfill in the near future, we need to act on this fairly soon, and so we are hoping to be able to get some funding this year with the scheduled opening of the facility or of the expansion of the facility to be completed and come online in 2009.
Mr. Chair, to that point, if this happens, which happened, Fergus Falls closed their burner yesterday, this refuse is going to start being stockpiled in a landfill. And I think the one thing that we're trying to do is eliminate that as much as we possibly can. We had a 40-acre parcel of land between Perm and New York Mills was started as a landfill a number of years ago before we started the burner project in Perm. And it was a flat piece of land. And today, before the incinerator started, we built a ski hill in the middle of Otter Tail County. And it's just frightening to see how fast this stuff develops and how fast these piles build. So I think that the sooner we can get this back online to eliminate that that pileup that will start now that that other burner is shut down, the better for the environment and for all of us. Thank you.
I appreciate that background. And my question actually is, because I'm interested in the next project we're going to be listening to, that may be higher technology that could be adapted to this type of situation. And I think we'll go to the next house file.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. House file 2789.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dale.
Representative Anderson has called in sick today, so he is not here. Also, members of the Cooch County Board and City of International Falls got blocked by the snowstorm to come down. There are people here to present the bill. So in Representative Anderson's absence, I'll move the bill hold it over for future consideration for inclusion in the bonding bill. So that is my motion.
Okay. And let members know we are underneath the kind of a time crunch. We have to be out of here at 10:15. There are some people here that have traveled the distance to present today, so we need to try and move along as rapidly as we can. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Steve Nias with the law firm of Flaherty and Hood, representing Coochin County. I bring greetings from Commissioner Mike Hansen and the members of the Coochin County Board. As Representative Dill mentioned, we gave Commissioner Hansen a snow day. So if the board will indulge me, I'd like to just read his testimony into the record, and then we can move on to our next presenters. I do want to thank Representative Anderson for carrying this legislation, House File 2789, to help promote the development of this innovative project. And I'd like to give the committee a brief overview of the Renewable Energy Clean Air Project, or RECAP as we've been calling it, and then I will introduce, sitting to my right, Steve Korstad and John Howard, who will describe the project in more detail. In a nutshell, RECAP uses a proven, reliable plasma torch technology to convert municipal solid waste into a synthetic gas and a high-quality slag that can be processed and marketed in a number of industrial and consumer applications. RECAP is an innovative answer to several issues, the first of which is the landfilling of municipal solid waste. As you heard from the previous testifiers, many of Minnesota's landfills are closing or have closed. Recycling rates are largely reaching a plateau around the state, and the landfills that remain open are fast approaching their capacity as more municipal solid waste is directed to landfills. This is particularly an issue in northern Minnesota, where landfill solid waste poses risks of leaching pollutants into our groundwater, pine forests, and wetlands. A second issue addressed by RECAP technology is renewable energy. Energy, as you know, is key to economic development, and as we all know, proposals for new coal-fired and nuclear power plants tend to be a little bit controversial. But plasma torch technology, on the other hand, would take our municipal solid waste after recycling and convert it into energy with minimal environmental impact. Businesses and communities in northern Minnesota need energy in order to grow, and RECAP is a responsible way to get us there. A third issue addressed by RECAP is jobs. There aren't necessarily a lot of them in Couchiching County. Once the RECAP project is up and running, we expect it would create approximately 15 permanent full-time jobs for northern Minnesota residents. While this doesn't sound like much for the $10 million price tag, what we need to keep in mind is the ultimate purpose behind RECAP and Representative Anderson's bill. Plasma gasification is a proven technology that's being used in Japan and in Europe, but it's only beginning to take hold in the United States. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I believe this would be the first facility of its kind in the United States. It's a scalable technology, which means that it can be sized larger or smaller according to user needs. If RECAP succeeds, it can be replicated in every region of the state to help address the landfill problem in an environmentally responsible manner while creating jobs. Minnesota is uniquely positioned to jump ahead of the curve on this technology, but in order to do so, we must act now. House File 2789 requests $10 million in bonding funds, approximately one-third of RECAP's total budget of just over $30 million. RECAP's funding structure depends on equal contributions from federal, state, and local sources. We're requesting $10 million because the federal funding piece, which would come from a number of federal grants, depends on matching funds from state and local governments. Couchiching County, as owner of the project, is a low-wealth county, but we believe we can come up with the $10 million necessary to fund our share of RECAP's cost. We're asking the state to pitch in another $10 million to make sure we can take advantage of the federal funding currently available. These federal funds will not be available to us next year, so it is critical that this funding is provided in 2006. This window of opportunity also coincides with the expiration of several existing regional solid waste contracts. We do appreciate the governor's proposal to allocate $1 million to the project directly. We are also one of the projects that are in the funding queue for the $4 million that he had recommended for the capital assistance project. However, $10 million is what we need to secure that necessary federal funding to get the project off the ground. In closing, I would just reemphasize that plasma gasification technology is a proven, reliable, and environmentally sound way to address Minnesota's growing landfill problem. This technology will also produce clean energy from a renewable source to help address growing demand for energy while creating jobs. If RECAP succeeds, Minnesota could have plasma gasification facilities potentially in every region in the near future. Minnesota has a rare opportunity to take the lead on adopting this technology. I'd now like to introduce the next few witnesses. John Howard, to the far right, is the president of Distributed Generation Solutions in Mendota Heights. And Steve Corsett, to my immediate right, is president of Corridor Capital Advisors in St. Paul. These two gentlemen have combined their talents to form Coronal, the company that's taking the lead on developing RECAP. They've put many hours into working with federal, state, and local government officials to get us to where we are today, and I think you'll find their presentation about RECAP very informative. So thank you again for the opportunity to read Commissioner Hansen's testimony to the committee, and we'll be happy to take any questions as soon as the other testifiers have presented. Thank you.
Before we go to those testifiers, if people that are here for House File 2676, Representative Slawick, House File 2865, Representative Lilly, House File 480, Representative Kahn, and House File 2897, Representative Hackbarth, your bills will not be heard today. They will be. We'll put them on the agenda for next Thursday. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Steve Corsted. I'm with Coronal, and John Howard is also another principal of Coronal. John has been with Honeywell for 17 years. He was with the Global Energy Department of Honeywell, so he has the technical experience. Myself, I'm with Finance and Land Development, so I have that experience. We teamed up to be consultants and developers for Couchiching County, and we are working on, as Steve Nias has mentioned, the RECAP project. We have a handout here, and if you could follow that a little bit, we'd like to just go over a block diagram so you understand the technology, and then we'll go right into the financing. The project overview, again, is to convert municipal solid waste to energy in 8 northeast counties using plasma gasification technology. The project will be owned by Couchiching County. The solution has been done in Japan. We're going to bring it over here in the United States, and we're hoping Minnesota can be the leader in the nation on that. We require $10 million of state bonding money. The second slide that we have on the bottom of the first page is the block diagram. If you could just refer that a little bit, and we could quickly go through it. We have the numbers here, and if I can just follow with the numbers. In number one, this is where the municipal solid waste comes in. This municipal solid waste is after recycling. So we still are with the statutory hierarchy. Well, we'll try not to make the waste. If we have the waste, we'll try to recycle as much as we can, then compost, and if all that fails, we'll recycle the rest of it within our facility. Because when you put the waste in this facility, nothing goes into the landfill afterwards. So it finishes it up the loop. It cuts the hierarchy down. We don't need incinerators, and we don't need landfills. The waste goes into this gasification vessel. It's a it's oxygen deprived, so there's no oxygen in the vessel. It's negative pressure, so there's no burning. So burning is a four-letter word for us, or burn. The torch you see coming down in the base of it, this torch is lightning. Lightning in a thunderstorm, that is plasma that comes down. There's electric charge in it. That is hotter than the surface of the sun, lightning is. We create our own lightning through electrodes using electricity, and it's in kind of a hollow metal cylinder. We have gas coming through it, and it forces the lightning out into a plume. So here's the plume that's kind of in the reddish color here at the base of the vessel. That will then gasify the organic materials in this solid waste. Any of the inert materials will then come out as the slag number three. The gas comes up as number two. Let's talk about number three first, this slag. If there is a mercury thermometer that happened to be in the garbage and didn't get recycled and go through, the mercury will come out at number three, but the mercury would be capsulized in this slag because it's a molten lava. So the mercury will not leach out of this molten lava. So that is really one of the major benefits of this slag, is the slag is not only usable in products, but it's also non-leachable. So the mercury will not get into our lakes. The gas coming up number two goes into the afterburner, cools down, it turns into a synthetic gas. About 40-some percent of that is hydrogen. Another 40% is carbon monoxide. The others, we clean it up a little bit. It can go into a boiler. We create steam. Steam can go and sell that to any kind of industrial use. We can also take the steam, put it through a steam turbine, and that can go into electricity. Minnesota Power is very interested up there, taking the steam and going into power. Boise Cascade, the paper mill up in International Falls, is very interested in taking, they can use all our steam. So we have hosts for both of those. The slag and number three, we're going to turn into rock wool. Rock wool is going to be used by USG Interiors in Cloquet, Minnesota. They produce ceiling tiles, and they put rock wool in there as an insulation. And they're very much interested in us being the supplier. So again, we create the recycling. We end up recycling 100%. There's zero waste. We go to the next. How are we going to fund this? I'll be brief here, but it's a three-legged stool. $10 million federal, $10 million state, $10 million county. The county is going to borrow their money. In order to borrow that, they need some equity in order to get the financing. So the equity we want is from the state, the $10 million from the state. With the $10 million from the state, we can then use that as cost share and get federal programs to get another $10 million. The federal programs are USDA, DOE, and some EPA money. Our timeline is the next slide. We were just done with kind of the gold section, going into the yellow section with the feasibility study. SEH is going to be the feasibility study company engineering firm. We have Chuck Michaels over to the right here if you have any questions on that. We'll go into the detailed design. This will be done by Siemens. Siemens is a German company and very involved with the U.S. economy. They're a $93 billion company in revenues now, so they're four times bigger than 3M. Siemens will build the facility and guarantee the operation of the facility. We'll go into construction, and finally in 08, be up and running. We have a window of opportunity here. We need the state money to get the federal monies. We need the state money for the county to sell their bonds. And one other that's very, very important is that the municipal solid waste contracts up north are coming due. So we have to get into that cycle, and when they expire, we take up the new and have 15-year contracts for the municipal solid waste to come to our facility. And those are coming up. The chart and the next year shows the 8 counties involved. The number of tonnage that's going to landfills right now in that area. The white dots, the lighter dots here, are closed landfills. And those landfills, of course, have been leaking, and that's why we have mercury in our lakes up there. You'll see now that there's only one landfill, actually two landfills in the area, the green area, one in Virginia, another one down in the southern part of the area, Crow Wing County, thank you. And there's one way over in Kitson County, and that's where actually Kitson County takes their waste right now. You'll see that 92,000 have been identified, and we've got the expiration dates of these contracts coming up. We're going to build a facility 100 tons per day. So that ends up 36,000 tons a year. So we're being very conservative. We have enough waste there. We've identified enough, and we'll get 15-year contracts for that waste. The demonstration project to show it can be done, and then we'll have other areas of the state accomplish the same thing. Finally, I want to just go over the problem, because we have outlined that, some members of the committee here. The problem is, in the last slide, is that our recycling has plateaued. We have been a leader in the country. We're plateauing about 40%. We want to increase that recycling to 100%. We can do that by taking we'll start with 36,000, but eventually there's 2 million tons of going to landfills. So that 2 million tons is actually growing. That's the black area. So it's getting worse. We're getting more and more into landfills. The recycling is plateauing. The aging incinerators, of course, are going down. They're being closed up like the one in Fergus Falls. So let me stop there. I want John to talk a little bit on some of the technology and also the very important environmental issues here, and then we'll be done.
Thank you, Steve, and Chairman, committee members. John Howard, Coronel, and very exciting project. It's interesting, this morning we've talked about three other projects, the wind to hydrogen, the Perm facility, and producing steam, all of which are embodied in this project. And at the end of the day, as Steve has described, nothing goes to the landfill. Now, the challenge that we have in front of us is the securing of municipal solid waste from the various counties. And to your point earlier, Minnesota is a leader in recycling of materials. Our data, based on the score report, which is produced by the Minnesota Pollution Control, shows that Minnesota sits at about 39% recycling rate in comparison to the other states around the United States. That puts us in number 3, number 4 position. Yeah. Within our footprint of counties that we are polling to receive their municipal solid waste, various counties have various rates, but at the end of the day, we will, as I said, pulling the waste in, process the municipal, the feedstock, and pull out other recyclables, and then send them on their merry way, and then only process the material that would have gone to the landfill. And so, from a hydrogen perspective, we produce hydrogen. As I said, the synthetic fuel is 40% rich. From a electricity perspective, we also produce electricity. At the end of the day, our facility will have the ability to produce 2.5 to 4 megawatts to the grid. Likewise, the slag that Steve has described commands a revenue. And so the main difference between us and some of these other projects, incinerators. For example, incinerators have an ash that at the end of the day ends up in the ground. In our process, nothing goes to the landfill. I think that's the real high points. Oh, by the way, this is functioning in Japan. So this, they're real facilities that we can touch, see, feel, watch, operate. Indirectly, those facilities are participants on this program through our partners, Georgia Tech, Siemens, and Westinghouse. And as we described, we are about to embark on the feasibility study where the good folks from SEH are going to help us and be the lead for that, as asked by the Minnesota Pollution Control, of bringing in an independent agent to evaluate the technology.
Okay.
So, with that question,
thank you very much for your testimony. It's my understanding that this type of technology is used in the United States to dispose of hazardous waste, and has been doing that for about 25 years. So, we have considerable experience in the United States. This application that would be new.
Exactly. The military uses it for the disposal of munitions. Carnival Cruise Lines has this technology on their ships for disposal of, you know, seaborne waste. Also, it's been used, as I said, for the destruction of medical waste. And our application, as the chairman has identified, is one application off of those described applications.
One other point, it's also my understanding that the facility, because it generates electricity and it actually needs electricity to fire the torch, that it actually will be making its own energy. And so once you get it started off the grid, it then produces energy and produces its own fuel.
Correct. Minnesota Power has already identified, once we get a kickstart, if you will, from the grid, as long as we continue to feed the torch with the feedstock, municipal solid waste, agroforestry, biomass from the region, we'll be able to sustain that reaction. And then, as I said, at the end of it, a net to the grid will be in the 2.5 to 4 megawatt range.
And one other point, with regard to impact on air emissions, that was not, I don't believe you addressed that directly, if you could address that issue.
Remember, these existing solutions are up and running in Japan. Japan is under something called Kyoto, the Kyoto Protocol. And so, by definition, this technology outperforms the emission standards that we have today within the United States, or the U.S. EPA standards. And so that's one of the other significant distinctions between us and incineration beyond burning. We start off with a better product to reduce the emissions.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I may add, we're at a temperature higher than the surface of the sun, so the dioxins and the furans cannot form, and those are the nasties for air pollution. So right off the bat, within the vessel, the dioxins and furans aren't being made, so our air pollution is minimal.
And to give you a sense of temperatures, incinerators are typically 1,200 to 2,200 degrees C. Our facility will be at 18,000 degrees C. And so there's a considerable energy difference that also speaks to we consume all of the chemical, biological nasties that could produce pollutants.
Question from members. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the group. I think you're asking for 10 and then a total project cost of $30 million. And you've mentioned the Minnesota Power as a partner. Just quick math, calculates 4 megawatts with the $30 million, that's $7.5 million per megawatt. And if I did my math at least somewhat correct, at $75 a kilowatt, even if I'm off by a decimal point, it's still $7.50 a kilowatt, which, you know, I could get you a whole lot of wind power for about 3 cents a kilowatt.
Okay.
I'm just asking. And then you described this. I'm just asking, who's going to buy it? Who's going to? Do you have a power purchase agreement figured out with Minnesota Power? And will they? What will they be paying per kilowatt if this thing goes through? I've seen a plasma torch in Hutchinson. I mean, it's pretty remarkable, and it's hot, and you can look in there with the welding goggles on, and I mean, it works. I've seen it done. And it's been around for many, many years, as the chairman has mentioned. I'm just wondering, you know, in the out years when it's going, Minnesota Power, I believe, has to do 25 megawatts a year under the renewable energy objective that we have till 2015. Are they going to actually buy this power?
The answer, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, the answer is yes, that we have not a contract with them on paper, but orally, they're willing to buy it for 4 to 6 cents a kilowatt hour. What they really like is that it's a distributed solution, distributed generation solution, at the end of their transmission lines. And so they want that type of, it's very important for them on the end of their grid, is to have this source of 3 megawatts. So it'll be there. But of course, this process is for not landfilling as well, besides electricity.
So isn't that the primary goal, is to not landfill? I mean, the production of electricity is kind of an incidental.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, once again, we produce product, and so there's revenue associated with that. If you're Minnesota Power, they don't necessarily look at this as an electricity generation project. True, we touch on their REO, the renewable energy objective. And thus, that's why they're at the table. Is this a waste management project? If you're a waste management person, they would say yeah. And so the flexibility of this project, I think, is another distinguishing factor between us and solely wind, us and solely incineration. We do all of the above. So.
Just a quick follow-up. So you've calculated out in the out years that it's going to come to 4 to 6 cents per kilowatt hour. I mean, I essentially just took $30 million and divided by 4 megawatts, and that's pretty expensive. So what you're saying is that once it gets going and going and going, it'll be 4 to 6 cents.
Well, that's what, Mr. Chair, Representative, that's what Minnesota Power has said they'll buy it from us.
Oh, they're okay, yeah. Different.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Not what it costs to produce it, right?
We're not home.
He's
in. Thank you. That's enough for me.
I think the point is that it's trying to, they don't have any more landfill space up there.
Right.
So it's really being put in place to eliminate landfilling. But it also has the potential of making some electricity, which can make it a closed loop for having the waste actually produce its own electricity. But it's not something they're going to be able to put on the market profitably. You know, that's the electrical production is there, but it's not going to be competitive.
Okay, so I'm a little off the mark. I'll admit that. Thanks.
It's not in competition with wind or anything like
okay.
that.
So right.
They're not trying to do that.
I'll take $30 million for wind, though.
Yeah. Representative Guinness?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I remember years ago that you were trying to persuade me that waste would be a resource that for which there would be lots of competition in coming years. And I was somewhat skeptical, but I'm going to give you that right now. I see waste now as a resource for which there is a lot of competition. The problem I see is that we have waste now being used and creating jobs in the recycling market. So I am very cautious about shifting from the recycling market to this market at a $30 million subsidy. So my question for you is the same as my question for the folks from Perham. Not what is the state recycling rate.
Mm-hmm.
That's irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
What is the recycling rate for these particular counties now And what will be the recycling rate once this project has been put into place? And that's something we need to know.
Chairman, committee member, the recycling rate, as I said, we have eight core counties that we are going after so far as their municipal solid waste. And it truly ranges anywhere from, Aiken County, for example, 37.7%, all the way down to St. Louis County, who's at 58.7%. Couchiching County, for example, is 31.8%. As a result of this facility coming online, once again, waste is going to be coming to our facility. There's something called a MRF, which is front-end sorting, pulling out the undesirables, pulling out the desirables of the feedstock. We, as a result of having this facility in the ground, would do additional recycling above and beyond with those respective counties who are participating on the program will perform. And so in a sense, it augments what they're presently doing at the curbside, for example.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hear that generality, but there will be the temptation to remove this resource and put it into this other stream. So part of this proposal needs to be not just a theoretical, but part of the contract agreement needs to be that there will be additional waste going into the recycling stream. If that is what your intention is, that needs to be part of what is actually out there. It can't be theoretical because we are already using those resources, and the biggest danger of this is people will say, oh, let's just burn it at this hugely subsidized rate. Waste is a resource, Mr. Chairman. You had it right on. But I don't want us to lose that resource just burning.
All right. Representative Dale.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, in the Peterson math, I think he was amortizing the whole $30 million against the electricity, and that wouldn't be a fair assumption in this project. But my question is, I read recently, Mr. Chairman, last week or so, in the Duluth paper, there was a front page article about a huge amount of waste going from the Duluth area, the county surrounding Duluth, and from Western Lakes Sanitary District, was going down to Wisconsin, and that into landfills in Wisconsin, and that Wisconsin was actually passing laws, or contemplating passing laws. The legislature there, General Assembly, was passing laws to prohibit that, and that the rates were skyrocketing because of the Minnesota waste coming into Wisconsin. And I'm wondering, I assume that what you're going to, I'll ask the question, that this type of technology in this location should give us some relief on that problem. I sense from what the testimony that would be accurate.
Mr. Chair, represented exactly that. The rates are going up in Wisconsin, also in Iowa. We need an alternative. Duluth will start looking at alternatives. Where do you put the waste? The recycling rate will increase in that sense as that waste comes towards us, because we'll sort it even more. And if something gets slipped through the recycling, we'll recycle right at our site,
right,
even ahead of putting the amount into the vessel. So we think even if 50% in the St. Louis area, Duluth area, they'll come up and we'll get that even higher. And then we solve also the problem that they can't put the other 50% in Wisconsin.
Okay, follow up.
Well, we're really short on time.
Go ahead.
If we can maybe cover this. These gentlemen are in town here, so I think they can be available for members if you have some specific questions. Thank you very much for your testimony. We will lay this bill over for consideration for committee recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
We're going to go to House File 2750, Representative Jarrell. And we've heard this in previous years, and so it's I think this will probably be a brief overview.
Yeah.
To remind us as to what this issue is about.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. House File 2750 was the same proposal was here a couple of years ago, but it didn't get through. It's a real worthy proposal, it would be improving the polar bear and some other displays. And we have with us, of course, there was Mary Murphy here, who's a co-author and a big supporter, and a citizen member, Tim Meininger, and the director of Parks and Recreation in Duluth, who can give you more information.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself to the record.
Thank you very much. My name's Carl Cias. I'm the director of Parks and Recreation for the City of Duluth. Chairman Osment and members of the committee, I'm here speaking on behalf of the city. With me is Tim Meininger. Tim is our best volunteer that we have for our Zoological Society, and just is a very wonderful supporter and has been for many years. The City of Duluth is focusing virtually a lot of its energy on the single bonding request this year, which is the new arena at the Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center. And last summer, the city prepared and transmitted to the Department of Finance several other requests for the state bonding authority. Our Bayfront Water Access Proposal, capital improvements to Skyline Drive, and the proposed Native American Interpretive Center at Spirit Mountain all have been placed on hold. One other proposal that the city has developed, in which there is some keen interest amongst our legislative delegation and members of our city, are the improvements of the Lake Superior Zoo. Our city has indicated a willingness and an ability to provide the $200,000 in matching funds for improved exhibits or asset preservation for the Lake Superior Zoo, and we understand that asset preservations or general improvements to our current infrastructure may be the appropriate use for the most appropriate use for the request for this year. The zoo is a significant attraction in our community and for the entire region. Our facilities are in need of attention, and the allocation of the state bonds for asset preservation would allow us to maintain our facilities so that our exhibits can continue to educate and thrill people of all ages who visit the Lake Superior Zoo. Your willingness to provide an allocation of bond proceeds for asset preservation at the zoo would be greatly appreciated, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify in front of you today, and Mr. Meininger and I will respond to any questions that you may have.
Senator Tim Murphy, do you have something you'd like to say?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a very important that we keep, especially the pump that cools the water and filters the water for the polar bears. And Saturday was National Polar Bear Day, and Representative Dorman recognized that, and it seems to be the year of the polar bear in Minnesota, and so we want to maintain our star attraction in Willard's memory.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I believe, members, this was one that we did recommend. It was part of our recommendation a couple of years ago, so it didn't make it through the process, but I think it did make it out of our committee before.
Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll now go to the next item on the agenda. House File 2919, Representative Lanning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 2919 continues to work on a project that's been important to those of us in the Red River Valley. We're still working to recover from the effects of the big 97 flood, and the communities up and down the Red are doing whatever we can to better protect our property in the future. Since 97, we experienced another major flood, 2001, And when you look back at the 97 flood, the Oakport Township that this bill addresses, the dike there, didn't get the kind of publicity that East Grand Forks, Breckenridge, and other places received, but the effects were every bit as damaging. We had 350 homes that were affected by that flood. Last year, the legislature approved the first phase on the development of dikes to prevent or to protect the Oakport Township and the homes. $2 million has already been received, and they've started the process of acquiring property. And another $2 million is reserved. So the $12.5 million roughly that's in this bill would complete the project. And we're hoping that if we are not able to complete it, that we would be able to do a second phase on this important project for our part of the state. With me today is Lieutenant Greg Anderson, who's chair of the town board for the Township of Oakport, and Bruce Albright, who's the administrator for the Buffalo Red River Watershed District. And I would turn it over next to Lieutenant Anderson.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Greg Anderson. I'm the chair of the Oakport Town Board. On behalf of the residents of Oakport, thank you for the opportunity to be here and present to you. Out of respect for your time, I'm going to be extremely brief and hopefully get this moving. Mr. Lanning did an excellent job of indicating where we've been to this point. Over the last 8 years, we worked very hard to try to bring flood control to Oakport. The project we're looking at, the areas directly north of the city of Moorhead, it's a rural residential development that's scheduled to be annexed into the city of Moorhead in the year 2015, so we need to get this working for that and also for the residents. The flooding affected about 300 to 400 families in Oakport. It damaged over 150 houses, over $3.5 million worth of damage in the last two floods. It's our goal to try to do something to protect those families and take the fear of the next flood away from them. I'm skipping through so many notes. I apologize if I seem a little out of joint. I'm really trying to cut three pages of notes to about 8 points. Basically, we've been marching for 8 years, and thanks to your help in the watershed, we're seeing some results. We'd like to get this finished as soon as we can. Our biggest fears are a future flood and what that'll do to our families and what that'll do to our properties. Another fear is FEMA and the Corps of Engineers have been studying the flood levels in our area. We anticipate that they'll actually increase the flood level by about a foot and a half. When this occurs, that's going to force 300 families to start buying flood insurance that they've never needed. Our estimated cost on that was about $1,000 per year per household, which in essence will draw $300,000 per year out of our community and out of our state to go to other areas. If we can get this dike built, we can protect the families, we can protect the homes, and we can keep that money within our state. The other thing is if the flood insurance comes in, we think it will erode property values, which will harm the families. It will also harm the tax base we have up there. And I guess with that, just out of brevity, I'll stop at that point and answer any questions I may have generated.
Additional comments?
Yes, Bruce Albright, the administrator for the Buffalo Red River Watershed District up in Barnesville, Minnesota. As Greg indicated and Representative Lanning, the township came to us in about 2003 because they had went down this lengthy process with the federal government and the Army Corps of Engineers and said we need help, and the Watershed District agreed to be the project sponsor. It does have to follow watershed law in order to develop a project of this nature. We are ready and able to assist them. We thank you for the $2 million that we got last year. That money is being spent as we speak in working on some home buyouts. And the area is a little bit unique, and I just want to talk about, you know, these aren't homes that are sitting right next to the river, and if the water comes up 6-8 feet, they're in trouble. In 97, we were looking at flood stages up there of nearly 40 feet. So it takes a lot of water to start affecting these homes. In this part of the Moorhead area, we've got about 6,000 square miles of drainage coming at us from Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. And this project would provide permanent flood protection for this area. Or I'm trying to say that the end is in sight. If we can get this done, these are the types of projects that we won't be coming back to
look at paying damages and do additional work. And the project will provide the protection that's needed for their infrastructure, their sewer, and their water in this area.
Thank you. Just out of clear, Representative Lang referred to if $12 million will take care of it completely. If you had to go in phases, what would the next phase be? What would the cost be?
I'd refer to Mr. Albright to direct answer that question.
With the $2 million, we do have contracts signed for with the DNR and the promise of an additional $2 million. A minimum, perhaps, this year might be an additional $2 million to bring us to a total of six. It's important to note that we can do diking in areas here that will provide permanent protection in the phased process. So it isn't like we build half a dike and everybody's vulnerable until we get the whole thing done. We'll be able to phase this in and provide protection for areas as money becomes available.
Any other questions? Okay, this bill will be laid over for possible consideration for by the committee. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And let's try to get in House File 2762. Pardon? You're gone? Okay, that's it for today? Great. Man, we got 30 seconds left. We can just... Okay. Thank you very much, members, and we will be getting back together then next Thursday, and it will be a lengthy day, so what we're not able to accomplish in the morning we'll then take up in the afternoon or after session. So we are adjourned.